I have a couple from your report. I was curious about, you said that the water was tested and came back negative. Can you tell me what it was tested for and what it came back negative for?
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
No problem. I just thought, great, it's negative. For what?
It's got a negative charge. No, it's so we had initially when we did the first test, it was basically to check this to make sure it was within standards for like the clarity and make sure that it didn't have anything in the water that was harmful. The second test we had to send out for, which we couldn't do in the initial test because we don't have the capability, is for any type of hydrocarbons in the water. So there was a request by the person who had concerns. It was actually, I believe it was in the persons to be heard portion. She had concerns about hydrocarbons in the water. That took a special report. So we had to send that sample out, and that one took about 2 weeks, and that just came back as negative. So they didn't find any hydrocarbons in the water.
Second question, in the sanitation department, you spoke about lasers and that the lasers went out, and this was fairly common to happen. We just had this system a very short period of time. And my question is, how often do these lasers go out? We just got this system. Do they blow up all the time, or what warranty do we have on this thing?
Well, so part of it too is, I mean, they're on the outside of the machine. So as you're operating, they will get bumped every now and then. So that was part of me. So we did bump one of the lasers with some of the equipment and with some of the debris. And so that's what knocked one of them out of alignment. And that's actually knocked the other one out of alignment as well.
Okay. So it wasn't like the laser burnt out.
It got hit. So it had to be replaced, and we replaced one of them because we do have spares on site. But the one we had an issue with, we just didn't know it was there.
Oh, okay. No, I just, the way it read, it said they go out, and I was like,
it got hit and got knocked out. So,
okay. The tire shredder, we got it ready to be shipped off. How far did we get with it? Like how, where's our pile at?
I don't know exactly. I'll have to check with Tom on that. The last I looked when I drove up there, we were about halfway through the tires. Part of the problem we had with the tire shear is when we got the really cold temperatures, when it dropped in the 20s, it just wouldn't operate. Like it had a lot of issues operating. So we lost about a month there. So we'll just, in the future, as we, and we're just going to, this will be rotated around to the different communities. Actually, there's Tom right there, so he probably has a better idea as far as how far we got along. But just in the future, in the wintertime, we just need to know a couple months. If it drops below certain temperatures, it's just not going to be useful.
More importantly, when do we get it back to work on our pile? What's our turn?
Tom, do you have that answer?
That is the one question out of everything you just asked that I actually can't answer. It's going to go to Petersburg next, and then after Petersburg, it'll go to Prince of Wales and to a handful of communities that are part of CISWA over there. My guess would be 2 years. I would say we got about a third of the way through the pile. We've got a full, about a 40-foot shipping container's worth, possibly a little bit more. And so, yeah, we're going to knock that pile back. And you know, I'm hopeful that when we get it next time, we'll be able to finish basically what we have there. Part of, you know, just to touch on what Jeff had said there, the cold temperatures and then also some COVID-ish challenges, I guess, within the department. Really slowed operations down. You know, it was manufactured in Iowa, so we kind of figured, oh, it should be able to run in pretty cold weather. And when we started having issues, the manufacturer basically said, yeah, you shouldn't run it in anything less than 32. And it was like, well, that would have been nice to know when we made the agreement to have it till February before shipping it off. And so, unfortunately, we didn't get quite as far as we wanted to, but we did learn some things. We did. Gain some ground and we'll be better prepared for the next time around.
How many tires a year does this island produce?
I estimated the pile to be somewhere around 20,000 tires, and that you know, to my understanding is 30 plus years. And so, you know, I guess you could say maybe 1,000 tires a year. Possibly.
On it, in other words, because I'm just wondering, my question is it worth our while to rent another, some type of something and keep at it? Because I just worry that 2 years we're adding to the pile, and I just want to make sure we're, anyways. Thank you. I have one last question regarding the wastewater. In your report, you said that our flows had significantly increased. And I can only assume that's from people opening up faucets to prevent pipes from freezing. Is that a correct assumption?
I mean, Tom can answer, but it's a little bit of both. So it's infiltration from our storm drains into the pipes. So we think we have some issues somewhere in there. Typically, if you're seeing big increases, it's especially when there's a lot of rain, it's because you're getting inflow from your storm drains, which shouldn't be tied to your sewer system. So that's where we suspect. So we're probably going to have to do some smoke testing this summer, which if we do that and we find that, then that's, we'll have to make some repairs to that as well. We'll have to address it if we find it. So Tom, did I get that right? Did I miss anything there?
Yep, that was correct. You know, with the amount of snow that we had, that was partially why the increase was so much. But also it's an INI and an inflow and infiltration problem. And that was part of what I was alluding to in some of the report. There is just, we'd like to do some smoke testing here in May or so, and with hopes of getting things fixed or working with community members or things like that. You know, if somebody has their gutters tied into their sewer, that could be an example of INI, and that would be something we would find during smoke testing. Or if it's broken, you know, on our side, we will find that as well and hopefully get some of those things fixed.
So my next question then is, what was your water production rates from your water treatment, or not water, your water treatment side? Did they go way up during the cold time?
They did, yes, during the cold time. And the wastewater flows were specifically higher in early January, well, kind of throughout January, really, whereas the water treatment plant flows would have been up in December with a lot of people, you know, likely running faucets and different things like that to keep pipes from freezing.
Okay. Thank you. No, there was one other question. Why, any understanding of, in the report, it mentioned but didn't offer up an explanation of four pumps needing to be replaced and two small grinder pumps needing to be replaced during, it was attributed to cold, under the general heading of cold weather. Why that, and how can that be prevented?
Well, there were, I believe it says, unless I wrote it wrong, it should say one large pump from node 4, which is the large sewer station at the corner of Case Avenue and Stikine, Friend Drive, right by Ramey's Bar there. One of the large pumps in there had failed. We had an issue with getting the grease and things like that sucked out in December, and so the pump was running more than it should. And then it had also appeared to staff that there may have been something else in the system. Maybe somebody dumped something down the drain that was fouling one of the probes. And once that had cleared up, the pumps were able to catch up a little bit. But, you know, ultimately, when flows and things like that increase, like we've had, you know, we're running the pumps harder than we should be, which is also, you know, part of the importance in trying to address the INI issues. And some of the grinder stations, you know, again, could be some of the same issues. And some of those were installed 20, 30 years ago, and they're finally starting to fail. And we've got a certain set. We have four or five different kinds of these small grinder stations that we maintain. And one of our most popular models, the E1s, they no longer make them anymore. And so we're not able to get rebuilds and different things like that. We're having to switch them all over to the newer model, which is the E1 Extreme is what it's called. And so that is something. And, you know, this is only my second season, I guess, in this position, but last winter, it was kind of the same thing. Like late in the wintertime, we seem to have a lot of grinder pump station issues. I wonder if it's just them running hard over the fall or during rainy seasons or things like that. And would be an interesting thing to track over time to get a better understanding of.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there's something we can do. That's a lot of failure, a lot of money. And I know that I think it was Assembly Member Gilbert asked a year ago or 2 years ago about sort of having stuff on shelf and, you know, making sure we got enough of whatever you need and that you guys have the supplies you need to swap out and do everything you need. It sounds like you do, which is great. But I was just wondering about why these things were failing.
So, Mayor, just talking about a little bit, and Tom and I have had this discussion as well. I mean, we do have different pumps in different locations, so we're not really standardized throughout our system. Just over the years, different pumps have kind of been bought. So that is something we would like to address in the future. As we go through and try to replace, we would like to standardize where we can. So it just makes, again, having fewer spares on the shelf than having a spare for each different brand we have out there. So if we can, we're going to try to standardize those parts, but it's going to take a little bit of work to do that.
For sure. And maybe in the next budget cycle, we can look at that and start to work towards it. But great. Thank you.
I was just going to touch on that one last thing. I had discussed that with Jeff and Mason and want to address, we do have a couple lingering holes in the inventory for the pump stations, specifically for some of the ones going out the road and then transitioning into new models. And so definitely something we're going to work at trying to address.
Perfect. Thank you. Any other questions for Jeff? Thank you for that report, Jeff. It was excellent. I really appreciate the time that your staff and you put into that. That was really, really thorough. And I learned a lot reading through it. So thank you. Okay. Borough Clerk's file. Kim, you're up.
Except that I will be leaving for vacation on Thursday. I'll be back on the 20th. I will file and publish the agenda and the packet on Thursday before the assembly meeting. And other than that, I don't have anything unless anybody.
Any questions for the borough clerk? Okay, we don't have any questions for you, Kim. Thank you. Mayor and Assembly business. Does anybody have any reports to make to the Assembly? The only thing I will mention is that City Manager and I met with Senator Stedman and his staff. Would have been, I believe, last Thursday, correct, Jeff? We just went through some of the issues for the community, talked about our CAPSIS list, and bought up our airport generator, complained a bit about why we're paying for ours. And, you know, it was a very good conversation with him. He was, I have to say, I don't remember him doing this before. So that was really positive. And I thought the tone of the conversation was really good. So Jeff, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
No, Ms. Mary, I thought it was really good. I think we definitely touched on a lot of issues, and actually we met, Assembly Member Morrison and I met with the Chief of Staff yesterday as well and kind of hit on a lot of the issues along with Representative Ortiz. So we're kind of brought them up to date on all of our current projects. So definitely a lot of support, and especially over the last couple of days.
Perfect. Thank you both for continuing on with that good work. Appreciate it. Any other reports? Moving on, 11, public hearing, there is none. Unfinished business, there is some. So now item A is item B from consent agenda, ordinance number 1018 of the Assembly of the City Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, amending chapters 5.14 borough budget by adding section 5.14.030 interfund lending in the Wrangell Municipal Code.
Move to approve first reading of ordinance number 1018 and move to a second reading with a public hearing to be held on February 22, 2022.
Moved by Gilbert. We have a second.
Morrison, second.
Seconded by Morrison. Discussion. Jeff, do you want to give us an update on this?
Yes, Ms. Mayor. So this is during the last meeting, whenever we had the funding and the interfund loaning request to go from the general fund to for the water treatment plant to our water enterprise fund. It was trying to set up something so that we actually had something in place to be able to do the interfund loaning, interfund loaned, and give the assembly some options as far as how they wanted to do that. And in this write-up, it gives a couple different options as far as what the percentage rates could be and how it wants to be set up. So it gives the assembly some options on doing just that.
Okay. Do you want to hit highlights or do you want Mason to just go through some highlights on that?
Yeah. If Mason could, I don't have it in front of me right now. So
Mason, yeah, do you absolutely. Highlights? Thank you.
Yeah, not a problem. So essentially what this ordinance does is it establishes guidelines for requesting an interfund loan. And it really sets the parameters that this should be like an infrequent occurrence, and which is what we can all agree is a healthy habit to have that be an infrequent occurrence. I really like to thank Patty for her due diligence on this. She kind of stole a lot of this from Fort Worth, and then we kind of wordsmithed from there. So we're kind of following our friends down in Texas. But this really just establishes the guidelines. It kind of talks about basically what we are expecting for an application, loan criteria. It goes into repayment, authorization, documentation, and responsibility. So you can kind of see the breakout of each of the subsections. Basically, you know, the main point that somebody might argue on this is the interest rate. We kind of agreed to set that at less than the prevailing market rate. And I was talking with Patty today about it. One reason why we can do that is we don't want to gouge the enterprise fund, right? They're supposed to be a business, so they should operate independently. But one consideration is every enterprise fund in some shape or form contributes sales tax off of their services, right? And so that sales tax is captured in the special revenue fund. And then per our code, 68% of that sales tax goes right into the general fund. And so you could make the argument that, yeah, well, you're you know, offering a reduced rate from the prevailing market rate, but still, I think that those sales tax proceeds generated from enterprise fund activity really does act as a buffer. And so I think it would kind of be a wash in general. You know, and the other option is it could be a gift for the assembly if they see the enterprise fund struggling. I don't think we want to get in that habit, but you guys are likely going to make that decision when we offer up a resolution for the Baylor project, because that was never voted on. So we need to get that through a resolution if this passes. So that's kind of just a general sense, but this is really offers guidelines. And you know, application process includes a financial capacity assessment that demonstrates that the loan's necessary. And the main thing is we really want to be able to justify the need, and you know, it should not be kind of a wishy-washy thing where we just want to steal money from the general fund and float an enterprise fund into a healthier status.
Any questions? Patty?
Yeah, I'm trying to find my hand. Also we have in the past loaned enterprise funds money. So this firms up the parameters in which we do that. And there, we did talk, the investment committee did talk that the authorization from the assembly would be by resolution. And so there's three little mistakes in this document that I will correct with an amendment here. But the other thing I wanted to mention that I just sort of noticed is under repayment, section D, subsection 2, it says that loans may be repaid on time or shall be repaid on time and may be prepaid in whole or in part on any date. And we may want to add without penalty. I don't know if that's being too picky, but we may want to add that phrase without penalty. But the amendment I'll make now, do you want me to make it now, Mayor, or do you want more discussion before I make the change?
How about we just finish up with our discussion and then you can make the amendment prior. Anybody else with questions? Well, why don't you go ahead and make your amendment, Patty? It sounds
okay. I move to replace the term ordinance with resolution in sections E1, E2, and E3.
Okay. And?
I was just going to say without penalty is, excuse me, is probably a good idea. That's what's usually included when you pay that. We're not going to charge. Can you hear me?
Sorry, Ann, you're really garbled up there. You're kind of.
It's probably maybe, our internet.
Maybe switch your video off.
I would say. Okay, just a minute. I would say add the words without penalty.
Okay, I'll do that. Mayor, may I finish my? Oh, I haven't done the amendment yet.
I'm going to take Ann's as the comment, and I'm going to now ask, is there any other comments or discussion? Hearing none, well, go ahead, please, Patty, make your amendment in its entirety and or your first amendment, and we'll go from there.
Okay, I move to replace the term ordinance with the term resolution in sections E1, E2, and E3, and to add the phrase without penalty in section D2.
Okay, do we have a second?
I'll second that, Morrison.
Morrison seconded, Gilbert made the amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, poll vote please, Kim.
Okay, and this is on the amendment. Assembly members, how?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
DeBoard?
Yes.
Gilbert?
Yes.
Morrison?
Yes.
Mayor Prasanka?
Yes. All right. Now, is there any discussion on the amended motion, on the new motion? Hearing none, please call the roll on the new motion.
Yes, Assembly Members Howe?
Yes.
Morrison?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
DeBoard?
No.
Gilbert?
Yes.
And Mayor Prasanka?
Yes. Okay. Now we're moving on to unfinished business, item B, which is the item that we moved down from our consent agenda, item C, ordinance number 1019 of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, amending chapter 5.02, investment of the borough funds by adding section E to section 5.02.050, investments in the Wrangell Municipal Code.
Move to approve first reading of ordinance number 1019 and move to a second reading with a public hearing to be held on February 22nd, 2022.
Moved by Gilbert, do we have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Morrison. Jeff, do you wanna lead this off or go right to Mason?
I can lead off real quick. I just wanna thank the investment committee for kind of going through this and figuring out better ways we can invest our money going forward. And that's kind of what this does. And I'll let Mason kind of get more into the specifics, but I did want to just thank the investment committee for the work that they put forth to going through this. So,
yeah, thanks, Jeff, and thanks to the investment committee. It's nice to see that rolling and meeting more than monthly now. So that's awesome. And this is one of the first contributions other than the interfund lending ordinance. And so essentially, I kind of talked a lot about, you know, when I present a picture of our assets, kind of how things are invested and how we're really limited. To low risk fixed income is kind of the most risky we can get. So it kind of goes cash, money market, and low risk fixed income with T-bills and CDs kind of in between. So this kind of offers a little bit of a greater exposure to a little bit higher risk asset classes, such as equity securities, mutual funds, and exchange traded funds. This really just gives us the tools to move forward and invest enterprise fund reserves. But we were pretty conservative in how we drafted the code. We want to kind of get our feet wet with things and just see how it goes. This is particularly written to address low interest rate environments. I mean, if we had, you know, the 10-year treasury yield, 5-year treasury, you know, up in historical, you know, norms back to like the 5% range or something like that, that'd be awesome. And we wouldn't have to worry about this. But this really gives us the tool in a low interest rate environment to kind of pivot and still invest some of our enterprise monies responsibly, but a little bit more aggressively. So kind of outlining the code, and this is section E I'm kind of looking at. It has to originate from an enterprise fund. The enterprise fund has to have a starting fund balance on that fiscal year of over $1 million. So an unrestricted fund balance, that's our net assets. You guys like to call them reserves, but really it's just unrestricted net assets. And then so 10%, if that it meets that first criteria of that fund balance, can be invested in, you know, equity securities, mutual funds, exchange traded funds, et cetera. It's important to note that we want to make sure that any investment that we, you know, kind of contribute to, we is in a readily convertible state, so we can liquidate into cash really quickly within 31 days. And really, when you think about it, transfers from any investment take a little bit of time anyway. So we thought 30 days was fairly appropriate for the code. And then anything that's invested, and this is probably the most important of it, anything that's invested is going to be either remitted to that enterprise fund on a pro rata basis based off of the principal contributed, or it'll just be automatically reinvested into the underlying investment until, you know, remission is necessary. So that's kind of some highlights. I mean, that's pretty much the whole code altogether, but it really gives us the tools to move forward and invest a little bit more aggressively in a low interest rate environment, but still responsibly. And I guess one other thing I'll add is, talked to our investment advisors and they said, it's all clear. We talked with the lawyer, all good. And then CPA firms, they also said we're in compliance with accounting standards. It is a bit unconventional, but there's a lot of boroughs that are asking these questions and trying to follow suit. So we're kind of leading the charge in this, which is exciting. And I think it's a good step in the right direction.
Thank you, Mason. Any questions for Mason or Jeff on this? Or Patty or Ann, they're both on our investment committee, so they can also take questions. And Patty and Ann, please chime in if you guys want to add anything to this. You've been working hard at it as well. Patty.
Yeah. Essentially, we're trying to treat enterprise entities as the businesses that they were designed by our code to be. And so with any business, they are able to go out for a loan, and other businesses are able to invest their reserves. And that money will be returned to the enterprise fund. The way it works now, the enterprise fund is not getting any return on their reserves. And this will help benefit not only the enterprise fund, but the ratepayers. It'll help build up the reserves.
Thank you, Patty. Ann.
And the thing that we really wanted to stress is that the interest that is earned is going to roll back into that investment fund unless the enterprise fund has a need for it, which that would have to come before the assembly to withdraw the money out of it. We all really felt that we were losing money the way it has been handled previously. Semi-aggressive investment portfolio. So I really hope that it works out the way we envision it.
Thank you. Yeah. One of the things, this is not, you know, I've talked with Mason about this, and I know that he's a smart guy and he's going to be watching this thing like a hawk. This is a work in progress. You're always going to be adapting. You're going to be watching, either we're going to be getting reports, you can back up and punt and move forward. I mean, this is, you're not bought in, and so there's a fair amount of flexibility too. And I'm pleased that we're finally looking at this because we have been we've been moving, like Ann said, moving backwards, and it just makes no sense whatsoever. And I'm not surprised other municipalities are looking at this. We don't want to be risking everything. There's no sense. We're not out there in cryptocurrency. But we could be doing a bit better than zero for sure. So I'm pleased that we're looking at some low risk things and trying to grow it. Just even the cost of living is going up so dramatically. And I think it's just wise. So I'm pleased. And I really do appreciate the investment committee's work. And my hat really goes off to Mason for getting the investment committee off the ground and pushing it. It's awesome, and his contacts in the investment world. So thank you. Questions for anybody? Let's call the roll, please, Kim.
Yes, Assembly Members Dalrymple?
Yes.
DeBoard?
Yes.
Gilbert?
Yes.
Morrison?
Yes.
Howe?
Yes.
Mayor Prasanka?
Yes. Okay. Item 13C is item E from our consent agenda. And this is correspondence with the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority land sale. This is a discussion item only. And this was just informing us of a potential sale. I'm sorry. So Kim, I'm wondering if it wouldn't be appropriate for me to read this into the record and then we can have a discussion. Would that be most appropriate? Or how would
you can. You can. This was added at the request of Carol Rushmore, and it's a correspondence item, so it does not require any assembly action. But if you wanted to read it, you certainly can.
Well, I don't want to read it because it's sort of legal mumbo jumbo. So
it's available for anybody if they want to read it, or I can give them a copy of it.
Okay. Jeff, are you familiar with this at all? I mean, when I read it, I got the basis of it, but can you give us a little update on this?
I can. I mean, it looks like a direct land sale, and I forget the name on there who it was a direct land sale with.
Direct land sale to the individual is, they determined that it's to Robert Searing, and it's that they feel that it's in their best interest to do the direct land sale to him. So they're not putting it out for a bid, is my understanding.
Correct, but I think there are some ways to dispute that as well, which I think being right behind Assemblymember DeBoard's house and his property, which I think anyone in the surrounding area, if they want to dispute that land sale, it's that property directly behind where he lives.
Okay.
And they're actually breaking it out. And like I said, when they can't, I mean, they're just notifying us that they plan to do a direct sell, and then there's ways to dispute it if you don't agree with it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, it's in the package. If anybody in the community would like to look at it and see it, I always want to call out Assemblymember DeBoer for declaring a conflict on it. I appreciate it. And if you'd like to speak to Assemblymember DeBoer about it, I'm sure he's got an opinion, so you can give him a call on it too. It is available to read there.
Just one more thing, Mr. Mayor. It did say there's an option to do a competitive bid, like if people want to put a bid in on it. The only thing I didn't know about was that it never gave an initial bid, so I don't know what the competitive bid would be. So I guess someone can call them and then maybe try to find that out and then bid more. So, but did want to put that out there.
Okay. Thank you. Does anybody have any comments on that or want to follow up any more on it? All right. I'm not hearing anything. So thank you. Okay. That finishes up our unfinished business. We're moving on to item 13, new business. Item 13A, discussion item, assembly direction regarding borough attorney professional services agreement. Jeff, do you want to walk us through this, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. So our for the attorney, the professional services agreement is technically up at the end of February. So it was 1 year contract with two option years, and the option years are up coming up in, like I said, the end of this month. So really the question is, for the assembly, do we want to go ahead and continue to just negotiate another contract with our current attorney, which is Joe Levescu, or do we want to put it out for bid to a separate contract? So it's really just trying to get guidance from the assembly on which way you want us to go.
So, Kim, how long has our contract, have we been with Joe so far?
I think it's 3 years.
Yeah, 2019.
Okay, so it's been 3 or 4 years almost. Okay. And so for new members, typically you put out a request for proposals or, from time to time to see, if there's other folks out there, if you're completely satisfied and you're not interested, you don't put out a proposal. If you'd like to see who else is out there, you can put out a proposal. And it's strictly up to the assembly to give Jeff guidance on what we'd like to do. So if, we can have a discussion about that now. Jeff, I'm sorry, Bob.
Yeah, sorry. I was just wondering, in this process, is there any evaluation process for the performance that happens during this or outside of this?
I haven't been involved in that. Patty?
That's a good question. We've never had a performance evaluation that we've ever discussed.
No,
it was just sort of a matter of form. Every 3-4 years, you go out for a request for proposals.
It's a contractor, so I don't know. It's not a bad idea. I don't know what to say on that. I've just never been involved in that. In my 7 years, we've never done an evaluation on a contractor. And?
Well, I remember when we hired Joe, we didn't do an evaluation. I think that the attorney before did not want to continue. Isn't that correct?
No, he did not put in a proposal.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. Yeah.
So part of it, didn't. You're also looking at, what they charge per hour and services and what their office has to offer and, how often they'll come down and visit. And, Joe had some attractive things that we were interested in. And that's, why we went with them. We had, what do we have? I think we had two attorneys put in and.
Mm-hmm. The guy from Ketchikan and Joe.
Yeah. And I think there was a couple of others that we had from Seattle, I think from somewhere, and we narrowed it down to the two Alaskans. Mm-hmm. What does the assembly feel? Do we want to just continue? Do we want to put out an RFP? How are people feeling? Yep, Ryan.
Yeah, I don't have any reason not to. I don't have any objection to continuing to work with Joe. I think it's gone fine. And if other people feel stronger about this than I do, fine. But I'm happy with his services, if that makes any difference.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And?
There have been a couple of things that I've wondered about, but they've always turned out fine. So, maybe it's better not to change a horse in the middle of the creek. That's Abraham Lincoln, by the way.
Oh, that's Dave.
Yeah.
Bob?
My thoughts are, it just seems to me we've fallen into a pattern of non-competitive bids for all sorts of our contracting issues. And I think this would be one that would be good to test the waters. And, hopefully Joe would put a bid or a, I guess that'd be a bid back in, but we could find out what other options are.
Okay. Patty, do you want to weigh in?
I would vote for, give you my nod of going out for an RFP with one condition. I want it to be at least a month for a response time. Last time it was really truncated and it was during the holiday season. So, I think there was only like 8 working days in which someone could respond. So, with enough notice, I'd like to see if the options out there.
Jim?
I say we continue as is.
Okay, so I'm hearing 1, 2, and Ann, you were stay the course, right?
Either way, I mean, I see value to going out for bid, and then I see value for continuity. So I guess if he puts an RFP back in, that's fine. So maybe going out to bid would be a wise choice.
Okay, so I got Bob, Patty, and saying go out. And Jim and Ryan saying stay the course. So I'm always about, I don't think it's bad to throw things out and test the waters. I'm with Patty on it. I think just seeing where we're at is never a bad thing. So I'll throw my hat in that ring as well. So I think, Jeff, let's take a look on that and have you dropped the RFP? I think Patty raises a good point. Let's make sure we have a good process on this and not a, I don't remember that process, Patty, but you do. So let's make sure it's fair and we give everybody lots of time to get a proposal together on it, please.
I'll have to probably negotiate an extension because we are kind of late. I didn't realize it was up. So I'll have to probably negotiate an extension with Joe for at least a couple of months to get everything together. So maybe 6 months and then we'll go up. That'll give us time to kind of go through the process as well. So I can do that.
Perfect, thank you. Okay. And then item B of new business discussion item, assembly direction regarding lobbying professional services agreement. Jeff, wanna bring that one up?
So this one, we actually have a little bit more time. This one's not due until November, but I figured when I brought the other one up, it would give me enough time if I needed to not have to extend the contract. But this is for Ray Matajowski here in Juneau. So it's our state lobbyist that we have. His contract was for 1 year and 3 option years. And I think we've had Ray for quite a long time, even before that as well. But again, he's into his third option year right now, and it's going to end in November.
Okay, so Ray is the state lobbyist that we have. We have federal lobbyists, and we have a state lobbyist. And I think I know Ann's worked with them, and Patty, I don't know who else has worked with them. I have as well. And I don't believe we've, at least in my time on the assembly, we've ever done an RFP for proposals for the state lobbyist. Patty, have in your time?
Well, before Ray, we had Steve Silver.
Okay. How long ago was that?
Probably 20 years ago.
Okay. Okay. So discussion on that item? Anne-Marie, can you say something? Yeah, go ahead, Anne.
Yes. To me, this is a little different. Simply because he knows our issues so well, and he knows the state issues so well. I can see putting out an RFP on this might be, I don't want to say it, might not turn out as well, because there are so many things coming down the pike that he's on top of. And he knows everybody. So that's something to consider in a lobbyist. He knows the issues and he knows the people. So for what that's worth.
Well, that's kind of a lobbyist job right there. You just summed up
right.
The lobbyist job.
And know who to talk to and know what to do.
Summed it up. Exactly. Know the people, know the issues.
Right.
Okay, Bob.
Yeah, it's same as the other one. I'd just like to see, to refresh us, go through a competitive process, make sure we're getting the best value, the best people.
Patty?
I agree with Assemblymember Dalrymple. We've seen Sebastian O'Kelly several times. He's our federal lobbyist. I've never met personally Ray. I've never heard his voice. I've never seen him. And I don't recall too many reports from him. I know he's a very gifted man, but I think it's prudent, good business to go after RFPs. There may be someone in his office even that knows the lay of the land.
Ryan, you're on mute there right now, just so you know. There you go.
Just when I think I have a minor after on this one, I lose it again. But I think it wouldn't hurt to, like, I think I agree with Patty, like, it wouldn't hurt to see if there's, to put a bid out, but I also want to know maybe if he'd negotiate his rate or change his rate or something like that too, like if we put it to bid. But also I want to know, what's our return on investment historically with a state lobbyist? I know federal, I don't know. I know you're shaking your head like I asked a silly question. I'm sorry, but I'm sincerely curious.
It's a great question. I was going to just say, there's so much hidden value. Like a guy like Ray, you know, there's just hidden value. You can't quantify a lobbyist's value by a spreadsheet, because it's like they have their ear, you know, like they have their ear to the ground, and it's a call to Jeff with a little heads up, you know, like it, that's just the thing I was going to, like, you just, there's no spreadsheet for it, Ryan. That's all.
So it's not, we're not measuring things that are brought into Wrangle. It's more like information we have and information we can share. Because it didn't seem to help with the ferry situation. But
Jeff?
Yeah, if I can just add. So really, I mean, even being here, so he's the one that's getting us in to see the senator's staff. He got us in to see Representative Ortiz. So he has all the contacts within the state. So and then having that conversation with them, it's allowing us to get our projects before them, right before they go before the assembly, right before they start doing the budget. So it's getting our projects kind of at the lead end of it. So we're not kind of trying to beg for it after everything's already been decided.
Okay. In light of that, I think I want to reverse and say, maybe I'm with Ann, because if it's more about relationships and getting information and having access, like, this guy clearly has that, you know, we could probably get somebody at a more competitive rate, but, you know, they're not going to be able to pick up the phone and get, you know, Senator Stebbins on the, you know what I mean? So maybe in this case it is different. So
I've been to Juneau a fair bit, and I've seen lobbyists work in the hallways, and all the lobbyists are doing that. That's what lobbyists do. They have their contacts. They get all their clients in to see their people. They usher you around. They work the aisles. That's what lobbyists do. And the question is, you know, you're just meeting with people and you're just trying to determine value. And if it is a relationship, but it's what lobbyists do. So there's no, you know, we have a relationship with the DC lobbyists. We have a relationship with the federal lobby or the state lobbyists. The question that I'm with Bob and Patty, I just don't think it's a bad idea from time to time to get a proposal put together that is competitive, that asks people to sharpen their pencil and take a look at the services they're offering. I agree with Patty. We've never had a visit from them in the time I've been here, 7 years. We've had a few times where it's come close. Now, I will say there was COVID and blah, blah, blah. That, okay, fair enough. But, you know, SEB, our federal lobbyist, has come pretty consistently to brief the assembly, and that's great. I just would like to see what else is out there. It's not offensive. These folks, it's competitive to these folks, and that's what they do. They have to, from time to time, put together a proposal and put another bid in. It's just business. That's my opinion. All right. Does anybody, Jim? Sorry, I haven't heard from you yet.
And I think if you just did it with the attorney, you're pretty hard pressed not to do it with this.
Probably.
All right. I'm looking through here. I'm thinking. No one's shaking their head vehemently not to do it with both. So we'll. Jeff, would you please prepare RFPs for both? And it sounds like the state lobbyist one would not be going out until sort of September, October-ish, correct? And then you're going to talk with the attorney to try to negotiate an extension and then do something later on. Perfect.
Correct.
Okay. Any other comments on that, folks? Hearing, seeing none. Attorney's file, item 14, attorney's file available for the assembly review at borough clerk's office. Executive session, item 15, we have none. And item 16 brings us to adjournment. Thank you very much, guys. 7:37, we'll adjourn. I hope everybody has a good night. Thank you.
Thank you.